I saw one of our men struck squarely by the whirling blades. He seemed to dissolve in a bright cloud of blood. One of his severed arms was thrown high in the air, and the bleeding chunks of his mutilated torso were dashed into the rocky earth as the chariot flew on without the least check. The phalanx of chariots was still aimed directly at the lap in our front line, and though I heard Kratos yelling orders to reinforce it, it was far too late. The column of chariots crashed into our defensive wall of shields and spears, and tore through it as though it were as insubstantial as a drift of river mist. In one instant our formation, that had stood the assault of the finest Syrian and Hurrian warriors, was cleaved and shattered. The horses spurned our strongest and heaviest men under their hooves. The whirling wheel knives hacked through their armour and lopped off heads and limbs as though they were the tenderest shoots of the vine. From the high carriages the charioteers showered arrows and javelins into our tightly packed ranks. Then they tore on through the breach they had forced, passing entirely through our formations, fanning out behind us and driving at full tilt along our rear files, still hurling their missiles into our unprotected rear. When our troops turned to face this assault on their rear, another phalanx of racing chariots crashed into them from the open plain. The first assault split our army in twain, dividing Tanus from Kratos on the right wing. Then those that followed so swiftly cut up the two halves into smaller, isolated groups. We were no longer a cohesive whole. Little bands of 50 and 100 men stood back to back and fought with the courage of the doomed. Across the plain, on wings of swirling dust, the Hyksos came on endlessly. Behind the light two-wheeled chariots followed the heavy four-wheeled war carts, each carrying 10 men. The sides of the carts were screened with sheep fleeces. Our arrows slapped ineffectually into the thick, soft wool. Our swords could not reach the men in the high body of the carts. They shot their points down into us and broke up the confused masses of our fighting men into scattered knots of terrified survivors. When one of our captains rallied a few men to counter-attack them, the war carts wheeled away and stopped, out of range. With their awful recurved bows, they broke up our gallant charges, and the moment we wavered, they came rolling back upon us. I was intensely aware of the moment when the conflict ceased to be a battle and became nothing more than a massacre. The remains of Kratos' division out on our right flank had fired the last of their arrows. The Hyksos had picked out their captains by their plumed helmets and shot nearly every one of them down. The men were disarmed and leaderless. They broke into rout. They threw down their weapons and ran for the river. But it was not possible to outrun a Hyksos chariot. The broken troops ran into Tanus' division below the hillock and tangled with it. With their panicking, struggling masses, they clogged and smothered what little resistance Tanus was still capable of offering. The terror was infectious, and the centre of our line broke and tried to fly. But the deadly chariot circled them like wolves around the flock. In all that chaos, in the bloody shambles and the tumult of defeat, only the blues stood firm around Tanus and the crocodile standard. They were a little island in the torrent of defeated men. Even the chariots could not break them up, for with the instinct of a great general, Tanus had gathered them and pulled them back into the one patch of rocks and gullies where the Hyksos could not come at them. The blues were a wall, a bulwark around the throne of Pharaoh. Because I had been at the king's side, I was in the centre of this ring of heroes. It was difficult to keep my feet, for all around me men struggled and surged, washed back and forth by the waves of battle like seaweed clinging to a rock in the full stream of tide and surf. I saw Kratos fight his way through from the shattered right wing to join us. His plumed helmet attracted the Hyksos arrows, and they flew around his head thickly as locusts, but he came through unscathed and our ring opened for him. He saw me, and he laughed with huge delight. "By Seth's steaming turds, Taita, this is more fun than building palaces for little princes, is it not?" He was never famous for his repartee, was Kratos, and I was too busy staying on my feet to bother with a reply. He and Tanus met close to the throne. Kratos grinned at him like an idiot. "I had not have missed this for all Pharaoh's treasure. I want one of those Hyksos sledges for myself." Neither was Kratos one of Egypt's greatest engineers. Even now he still believed that the chariots were some type of sledge. That was as far as his imagination reached. Tanos tapped the side of his helmet with the flat of his sword in greeting, and although his tone was light, his expression was grim. He was a general who had just lost a battle and an army and an empire. "Our work here is finished for today," he told Kratos. "Let us see if these Hyksos monsters can swim as well as they can run. Back to the river." Then, shoulder to shoulder, the two of them shoved their way through the ranks towards the throne, where I still stood. I could see over their heads, over the periphery of our little defensive ring, out over the plain where our broken army was streaming away towards the river, still harried by the squadrons of chariots. I saw the golden chariot of the Hyksos king wheel out of formation and cleave its way towards us, trampling our men under the flying hooves and chopping them up with the glittering wheel knives. The driver brought the horses to a rearing, plunging halt before he reached the barrier of rocks which protected us. Balancing easily on the footplates, the Hyksos drew his recurved bow and aimed at me, or so it seemed. Even as I ducked, I realized that the arrow was not meant for me. It shrieked over my head, and I turned to watch its flight. It struck Pharaoh high in the chest and buried half its length in his flesh. Pharaoh gave a hoarse cry and tottered on his high throne. There was no blood, for the shaft had plugged the wound, but the feathers were a pretty scarlet and green. Pharaoh slid sideways and collapsed forward towards me, and I opened my arms to receive him. His weight bore me to my knees, so I did not see the Hyksos king's chariot wheel away, but I heard his mocking laughter receding as he dashed back across the plain to lead the slaughter. Tanos stooped over me as I held the king. "How badly is he struck?" he demanded. "He is killed," the reply rose to my lips unthinkingly. The angle of entry and the depth of the wound could mean that only one outcome was possible. But I choked off the words before they were spoken. I knew that our men would lose heart if Great Egypt was slain. Instead, I said, "He is hard hit, but if we carry him back aboard the state barge, he may recover." "Bring me a shield here," Tanos roared, and when it came, we gently lifted Pharaoh onto it. There was still no blood, but I knew his chest was filling like a wine jar. Quickly, I felt for the head of the arrow, but it had not emerged from his back. The point was still buried deep within the cage of his ribs. I snapped off the protruding shaft and covered him with his linen shawl. "Taita," he whispered, "will I see my son again?" "Yes, mighty Egypt, I swear it to you. And my dynasty will survive, even as the mazes of Amun-Ra have foretold." 10 strong men here," Tanos bellowed. They crowded around the makeshift litter and lifted the king between them. "Form the tortoise. Close up on me, the blues." With interlocking shields, the blues formed a wall around the king. Tanos raced to the blue crocodile, which still waved in our midst, and tore it from its pole. He wound it around his waist and knotted the ends across his belly. "If the Hyksos want this rag, they'd better come and take it from me," he shouted, and his men cheered this piece of foolish bravado. "All together now, back to the ships, at the double." The moment we left the shelter of our little rocky redoubt, the chariots came at us. "Leave the men," Tanos had found the key. "Kill their beasts." As the first chariot bore down upon us, Tanos flexed Lanata. His bowmen drew with him, and they all fired on his example. Half our arrows flew wide, for we were running over uneven ground and the archers were winded. Others struck the bodywork of the leading chariot, and the shaft snapped or pegged into the wood. Still other arrows rattled off the bronzed plates that covered the chests of the horses. Only one arrow flew hard and true. From the great bow, Lanata, it sung with the wind in its feathers and struck the offside horse in the forehead. The creature went down like a rock slide, tangling the traces and dragging its teammate down in a cloud of dust and kicking hooves. The charioteers were hurled from the cockpit as the carriage somersaulted, and the other chariots veered away to avoid the wreckage. A jubilant shout went up from our ranks, and our pace picked up. This was our first success in all that dreadful day, and it manned and encouraged our little band of blues. "On me, the blues!" Tanos roared, and then, incredibly, he began to sing. Immediately the men around him shouted the opening chorus of the regimental battle hymn. Their voices were strained and rough with thirst and effort, and there was little tune or beauty to it, but it was a sound to lift the heart and thrill the blood. I threw back my head and sang with them, and my voice soared clear and sweet. "Horace, bless you, my little canary," Tanos laughed at me, and we raced for the river. The chariots circled us with the first wariness to their manoeuvres that they had demonstrated all that day. They had seen the fate of their comrade. Then three of them swung across the front of our tortoise, and in V formation charged at us head-on. "Shoot at the heads of the beasts," Tanos shouted, and led them with an arrow that brought another horse crashing to its knees. The chariot overturned and was smashed to pieces on the stony ground, and the other vehicles in the formation veered away. As our formation passed the shattered chariot, some of our men ran out to stab the squealing horses that were trapped in the wreckage. Already they hated and feared these animals with an almost superstitious dread, which was reflected in this vindictive piece of cruelty. They killed the fallen charioteers also, but without the same rancor. With two of their chariots destroyed, the Hyksos seemed reluctant to attack our little formation again, and we were rapidly approaching the morass of muddy fields and flooded irrigation ditches that marked the river bank. I think at that stage I was the only one of us who realized that the wheeled enemy could not follow us into the swamp. Although I ran beside the king's litter, I could see through the gaps in our ranks the dying acts of the little battle that were being played out around us. Ours was the only surviving detachment that still showed any cohesion. The rest of the Egyptian army was a formless and terrified rabble streaming across the plain. Most of them had thrown aside their weapons. When one of the chariots drove at them, they dropped to their knees and held up their hands in supplication. The Hyksos showed them no quarter. They did not even waste arrows upon them, but swung in close to chop them to tatters with the spinning wheel knives, or to lean out of the cockpit with the lance and cut them down, or to smash in their skulls with the stone-headed maces. They dragged the victim behind them, still spiked on the lance, until the barbed spearhead disengaged, and only then did they leave the crumpled corpse lying in their dust. I had never seen such butchery. I had never read of anything like it in all the accounts of ancient battles. The Hyksos slaughtered our people in their thousands and their tens of thousands. The plain of Abnab was like a field of durra corn after the reapers had been through it with their scythes. Our dead were piled in drifts and windrows. For 1,000 years our armies had been invincible, and our swords had triumphed across the world. Here on the field of Abnab, an age had come to an end. In the midst of this carnage the blues sang, and I with them, though my eyes burned with tears of shame. The first irrigation ditch was just ahead when another chariot formation swung out on our flank and came driving hard at us, three abreast. Our arrows fell all about them, but they came on with the horses blowing hard through gaping red mouths and with the drivers screaming encouragement at them. I saw Tanos shoot twice, but each time his arrows were deflected or were cheated by the erratic swerve and bounce of the chariots. The formation thundered into us and broke the tortoise of our interlocking shields. Two of the men carrying Pharaoh's litter were cut to shreds by the wheel knives, and the wounded king was tumbled to the earth. I dropped to my knees beside him and covered him with my own body to protect him from the Hyksos lances. But the chariots did not linger. It was their concern never to allow themselves to become entangled or surrounded. They raced on and clear before our men could reach them with the sword. Only then did they wheel and regroup and come back. Tanos reached down and hauled me to my feet. "If you get yourself killed, who will be left to compose a hero's ode to us?" he scolded me. Then he shouted for men. Between them they picked up the king's litter and ran with it for the nearest ditch. I could hear the squeal of the chariot wheels bearing down on us, but I never looked back. In ordinary circumstances I am a strong runner, but now I outdistanced the litter-bearers as though their feet were chained to the earth. I attempted to hurdle the ditch, but it was too wide for me to cross in a single leap, and I landed knee-deep in the black mud. The chariot that was following me struck the bank of the ditch, and one of its wheels shattered. The body of the vehicle toppled into the ditch and almost crushed me, but I managed to throw myself aside.